Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Raw Rundown. When the fuck can I stop podcasting? That is my question. When is my next fucking day off? And the answer to that is Saturday is my next day off.
Oh,
SmackDown,
it's
somebody
Tuesday.
SmackDown Summary tomorrow, Power Slam podcast on Thursday, Retro Raw on Friday. Which, So for me it's 15 days, 15 podcasts. And when you're not podcasting, you're doing like 7 interviews a day.
I mean, yeah, so your voice is done.
And don't get me wrong, I know that me complaining about that would be like, oh, poor you. Poor life you have.
Right.
I'm fine. It's just my voice is being tested to its limit. Somebody actually sent a thing out in the community and said, like, how do you still sound okay? Because you talk so much. I was like, I don't know.
Just, yeah, like my voice is shot and I don't even know why. Like, I can't even explain it. I went out with some family and, like, I did a podcast. After that, my voice is completely done. I don't get it at all. So, yeah, kudos to you, sir.
So, we're going to talk about Raw. This is the Raw Rundown, episode number 57. The night after SummerSlam. And it's an interesting show to talk about because I think on the surface, there was some really good stuff on the show. Like, there was some fun stuff and some good storyline progression, but the overall arc of the show seems to be taken away by the beach ball, which we will get to and we will talk about. David and I feel the exact same way on this fucking thing.
I had people... David McCutcheon, everybody, how you doing? I had a bunch of people...
See, I've been doing so many podcasts, I forgot to introduce you. This is David McCutcheon.
No, it's fine. It's fine, Kenny. It's fucking fine. I just had to do my own introduction. No big deal. No big deal. I'm not hurt about it or anything. But I had a bunch of people tweeting me in defense of the beach balls. And they're like, well, the product's so terrible, though, that we have to make the fun ourselves.
No, it's not.
A, that's a bunch of bullshit. B, the other thing they said in particular, and this guy, I won't name him, but I respect his opinion a lot of times, and he's a good follower of mine. So I'm not naming him because I don't want to drag him under the bus. But he goes, they only did the beach balls during the boring parts of the show. And I'm sitting there thinking, motherfucker, do you watch wrestling or what do you watch? Because the wrestling match that was going on was with Finn fucking Balor, who you people are supposed to like and cheer for, but I guess you hate him, and Jason Jordan. And they put on a hell of a wrestling contest. It was an amazing match and nobody paid any attention to it because of a fucking beach ball.
They also brought the beach ball out during the Hardy Boys versus Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. So that theory is shot to shit.
Which, by the way, amazing match and a literal, like, bucket list kind of match that we never thought we would see. The Hardy Boys versus The Shield?
Yeah, I know. But you know what, like, here's my one defense of the beach ball, which I hate to give it any credence, but I want to at least try and be. I understand the beach ball coming out during the Cruiserweight match, because I couldn't have given a fuck about that either. So, if you want to do it during the one really boring match and get it out of your system, fair enough. That's fine to me. My issue is that when you do it during everything else, it's just like, Meltzer kind of verbalized it the best way, and it's like, if this keeps happening, like, it makes the television show that, like, 3 fucking million people are watching, like, ineffective. Because they can't, because the wrestlers can't tell stories because the fans need to get over. The fans. And it's like people go, there's a guy on Twitter, Nathan, and perfectly nice guy, and he's just kind of saying, like, it is stupid, but he was kind of trying to defend parts of it. And, like, some of the arguments he was saying, you know, he's perfectly right. You know, people have paid their money, and they technically can do what they want. But I also can technically shit in my own hand and smear it in your face. Doesn't mean I should. You know? Like, there's etiquette.
Well, that might be assault. So I think the better term for that would be you could shit your pants right next to a person and puke on your shoes right next to a person, and they would have to sit and smell your feces and your vomit.
Rather than going to the bathroom like anybody else, yeah.
Right, right, exactly. But the exactly.
The thing about the whole... I mean, I kind of knew when Cesaro did what he did, which was fucking glorious, as we talked about on the...
Oh, yeah, hold on 1 second, Kenny. I need to go masturbate because you just mentioned Cesaro popping the balloon, and that's my new fetish. So, so give me 3 seconds. 1, 2, 3. All right, I'm done masturbating. Thank you, Kenny. Go on.
It's longer than you usually take.
I'm working on my stamina, you know.
Anyway, I was going to actually debate the difficulty of stamina there, but I'm not going to. It's another conversation for another time. Listen, when you've had a cocktail, it's difficult to have the stamina. You know what I'm saying?
Sometimes get a little bit of the old whiskey dick. Yeah, no, I can relate.
Sometimes
yes.
You can't get that full Orient Express level train journey through, right? Sometimes it's just a one-stop effort. Anyway. You know what I'm saying, ladies? But the thing with the beach ball is, like, yeah, technically you can come and do what you want, but, like, it was so bad. So I chose one approach, and my friend Ollie chose another approach. My approach was, I am not going to allow these fuckers to ruin the show for me. So I just, like, it was very difficult. It's very difficult to focus, but I did. But Ollie was just, like, it was during the main event, he was just like, can we go? Like, I don't even want to be here. This is rubbish. And I was like, so we paid, you know, $100 for a seat to watch the night after SummerSlam, where we want to see Finn Balor. We want to see, you know, how are they going to handle this Jason Jordan thing? We want to see the Hardys versus the Shield. We want to see, you know, Samoa Joe teaming with the Miz, two of the best heels in the company, going up against John Cena and Roman Reigns. Another thing, John Cena, Roman Reigns, a moment which should have been monumental in WWE history. And it's like, the problem I have with it, the biggest problem I have, is that the same fucking fans who throw the beach ball or boo security for doing that are the same people that will go home and go on Twitter and go on Facebook and go in groups and communities and go, oh, you know, I miss when, like, wrestlers were over and stories mattered and things worked. And you're like, you're the fucking problem.
Yep.
Not the wrestlers, not the company. Because the thing is, I'm going to take umbrage here. Raw in the last couple of months has been good. I don't care what MD says.
Yeah, no, it has.
You know, can we pick at things? Of course we can. But on the whole, it's been a very enjoyable show with a lot of good stuff. So I don't buy the mentality of, oh, the product's so rubbish that, like, you know, that you can just say that, like, I don't even want the beach ball to happen with Jinder. It's not that I'm saying it's
not like. No, because, like it or not, he is the champion, and that completely degrades and disrespects the champion.
And God bless Jinder Mahal. If he can somehow get over and prove me wrong, I'll happily say I'm wrong. You know, I don't want to be having the rants that I have about it. But, like,
right.
It's just got... So when Cesaro did his thing, I knew it was going to be more and more and more. The problem is, how do you stop beach balls getting in? You know, people can conceal them very easily. And then somebody... This guy... I'm going to actually name and shame this fucker because he deserves it. Let me find him. There was a guy who tweeted cage side seats this morning, and he talked about he'd been ejected from the Barclays Center. So I just want to pull up his Twitter and name him and shame him, and just see what's he like. Let's look at a sort of general beach ball thrower and what kind of Twitter person they are. I know, so
yeah, let's do this live. Let's do it. Live. Okay. Now I'm curious. I love judging people, Kenny.
So he is Jesus Shuttleworth.
Oh, Shuttleworth. Yeah. Well, his new name is Jesus Shuttlecock.
Well, I'd fucking smash a shuttlecock in his face. He's from Quincy, Massachusetts. So
of course he's from fucking Massachusetts. Jesus Christ.
So here he goes. Let's start at the beginning. Cage side seats, he tweets. Just got kicked out of the Barclays Center for bringing in the beach balls. WWE does not like hashtag beach ball mania.
Good.
Then,
either
another guy called Beach Ball Bandit, who should be set on fire and killed immediately, tweeted saying, I've avenged you, good sir. And then Jesus says, you wouldn't happen to be the guy who sat behind me with 5 beach balls, would you? And he said, I might just be. And then he said, I was booted just for them to promote it an hour later. Like he's proud. Like he's like, oh, I came up with this genius idea, now WWE promote it. Now they had to put it on TV because fuckers like you wouldn't leave it alone. Well, there was a guy behind me who brought in five and I got the boot over two. Cesaro has started something that will not be stopped. I will kill you, motherfucker. Wow. You absolute fucking cancer on the breast of wrestling. You are a fucking horror show. I'm a martyr in the Beach Ball Mania cause. We will live on.
Well, if he wants to be a martyr, we can make him one.
WWE shouldn't show it on camera and talk about it if they're going to kick people out for participating. So let me get this straight. Because if this is true, let's test the theory. Jesus, do you do what anyone tells you to do? Because I'm going to give you an instruction live on air. Find the nearest fucking bridge and jump. And I will come to your funeral, sir. Where your family are crying about the suicide that you've done. And do you know what I'm going to do? Out of my fucking pants, not my trousers, but my fucking underpants, Calvin Klein's, I'm not going to go cheap for this one, and I'm going to pull out a fucking beach ball, and we're going to toss it around your fucking funeral. Because, you know, beach ball mania can't be stopped, even at your funeral, you pathetic
it's got to run wild, brother. Run wild all over your crying mother.
David and I road trip to Quincy, Massachusetts for your fucking funeral.
Oh, God, I gotta go to Massachusetts. Blah! Blah!
So that's just an average beach ball guy and what they do.
So, what's his other tweets read like? You need to go down his, like, feed from, like... Okay, usually you can, like, find something funny through his pictures from, like... that's a good way to, like, time jump, I find, especially if people tweet a lot. You just go to their pictures and scroll all the way down, and there you go. You're like a year beforehand. And you can find them. They're all like, here I am in my really cool fur jacket. And then you look at him, and he just looks like the biggest douchebag on the planet.
Oh, God. So he retweeted another guy who had retweeted an article about Hooters closing locations because millennials aren't into boobs with the retweet of, we into respecting women now. Join the way. Oh, no, that's actually good. Oh, that's a good one. He's into respecting women. Fuck you, Jesus! Now I can't tell you to fucking jump off a bridge.
He's one of those male feminists that just does it to get laid.
Oh, God.
Fuck him!
What else does he say? Oh, he likes Drake. Likes Frank Ocean.
Fucking there you go.
Oh, no, I can't wait. I think this one's going to pop you. He likes the Boston Celtics.
Ugh. Fucking.
Oh, no, that is even better. Do you know who he retweeted on the 6th of July?
Who?
The Red Sox.
Can we just, like, pour gasoline on this motherfucker since he wants to be a martyr so damn much?
That's basically him. He loves baseball.
Loves having fun!
Hip-hop, and he loves beach balls, so...
Blowing up some beach balls, booping and the beeping and the bopping.
Thing is, I'm the worst guy to look through his Twitter feed because it's just all these American sports references. It's like me looking through Game of Thrones.
No, he's a Boston, Massachusetts sports fan. That's
not
what he is.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not even Boston. Quincy, which is the shittiest part of Boston. That's like where Randy Orton grew up in St. Louis.
There you go. Well, Jesus, go fuck yourself. But yeah, I'm glad that you respect women. At least that's one good thing you've got going for you.
Yeah, maybe you should attend more fucking feminist protests with some beach balls.
No, do you know what? Actually, I changed my mind. Do you know what he says? Fuck you. Hooters should stay open. If a guy wants to go and stare at a pair of tits and get some wings, he should be able to. You go fuck yourself.
Kenny just doing a 180 on him.
Go on your abortion rallies. I'm going to go and get some fucking wings and watch some sports with some tits.
Yeah, watch those Celtic games from this
inside the Hooters. Cue inside the ropes losing half of his female listenership. Anyway,
I'm going to stop listening to us after I said something about watching basketball.
Also, somebody had said that sometimes apparently I'm holding the mic too close to my face and there's a popping sound. So hopefully that's still not happening. I'm trying to like stop it. So let me know if it sounds okay.
Kenny, you get too enthusiastic about your rants and you just start eating your microphone. It's happened to the best of us.
I do it too often. So, Raw kicks off at the Barclays Center in New York City. I was feeling rough yesterday. rough.
Oh, you're about to feel a lot rougher after all this shit that you had to endure.
So I hadn't eaten all day. I couldn't stomach anything. I mean, I had a little kind of wet the dog beer. I'm not an animal, you know.
Right.
But bought my SummerSlam collectible cup. Very cool, you know. One side SummerSlam with all the guys on it and the girls, and what, the other side the NXT Takeover. So that's cool. They don't do a official SummerSlam tour program and a SummerSlam event program anymore, which I'm very sad about.
Really? That's strange to me.
They just do the live event program. The only event that they do a specific program for is WrestleMania.
Wow, that's nuts. I wonder why. I mean, they're sitting on, like, stockpiles of those damn WrestleMania ones, so that's probably why. But yeah.
So we kick off Raw with the Universal Champion Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. They come out, they talk about the fans chant Suplex City. Everyone was going mental in the arena. We loved Brock Lesnar. Heyman talked about, you know, this is not a rerun, this is live. Talked about the conspiracy. Boasted about Lesnar pinning Roman Reigns. Talked about, you know, if there is conquering to be done, you know, it'll be Brock Lesnar. If there's victimization to be carried out and all these sort of things. And then he said, there is nobody in WWE or UFC history who does it like Brock Lesnar. And Brock's just smiling through the whole thing. Apart from when Heyman said that Brock Lesnar had to be taken out of the game, and Brock's just like, nope. Didn't happen. And Braun Strowman comes out. Huge Strowman champ. People love Strowman in New York City. They kind of jaw-jacked. Then Lesnar gets grabbed by the throat by Strowman. Lesnar reverses. Lesnar runs off the ropes. Strowman catches him with a big boot. Then Strowman power slams him twice, leaves him laying, picks up the Universal title, throws it in the air. He wants the title, and that's the end of the segment. We are going to get Brock Lesnar versus Braun Strowman and No Mercy at the end of September. What a hot opening segment for Monday Night Raw. How did it translate at home?
Oh, it felt like the biggest fight that has ever happened in the history of mankind. It was great. This is the type of marquee attraction that the WWE needs right now, Kenny. And this is the type of thing that will hold audiences' attention. I'm happy that it happened earlier in the evening as opposed to whenever people were throwing fucking beach balls around. Because could you imagine people throwing beach balls around during this segment? Jesus Christ. It basically looked like Brock Lesnar was a toy or a stuffed animal, and Braun Strowman was just chucking him around to and fro. It was awesome, man. I am all in on this. This is the thing that should be headlining WrestleMania next year. Not Lesnar and Reigns, but I guess that's what we're getting, so you can't always get what you want, right?
Do you know what, though? Like, as much as I would like to see a WrestleMania, and I said that on the SummerSlam podcast, like, after seeing this last night, like, there is an argument to be made for striking while the iron's hot, you know? But I think that this has to be the beginning of a feud rather than just a one-off.
I was going to say, you can do it at both. I mean, it's not either or. I mean, you can do it twice.
Yeah, you can. And I think that you... I mean, I almost think there's more intrigue in Cena Reigns at WrestleMania than there is in Reigns and Lesnar. Because with Reigns and Lesnar, I just don't know what... Like, I feel like the idea of, you know, Lesnar needs to be pinned by somebody and it's going to be Roman Reigns. Like, I just don't know if Roman Reigns really needs it. You know, like, I don't know what you expect to happen. If Roman Reigns pins Brock Lesnar, what are people going to... Are people going to go, I love him now! He pinned the Beast! Like, what's... what's going to change? You know?
I think we are in agreement that wrestling needs consequences and it needs a chain reaction to set something off, right?
Yeah, 100%. And, I mean, this was... Like... I think that Joe and Lesnar was great, and I do wish for Joe's sake that it had gone on a little bit longer, but after this show, I'm quite happy with where he's been positioned. But I think that Braun and Brock is the match. Like, it's the match. It's out of, like, everybody you want to see Brock face, this is the one. And I think they've been so clever in how they've presented these two so far, because Braun completely got the better of him at SummerSlam, and then Lesnar... you know, tried to get into with him on Raw, and he was unsuccessful. It's almost kind of like another twist on the Goldberg story, where like Goldberg had Lesnar's number. So I'm kind of keen to see how they tell this story going into No Mercy.
Yeah, no, it could go one way or the other, but I mean, either way, it's going to be a hell of a ride, you know. And I'm all about it. I am 100% on board with this. It's the match that we deserve.
Yeah, and if we are, it looks like we're going to have a double main event. No Mercy, that I might just fall in a heap of my own cum at the end of it. Like, it's just
but it's amazing how Raw tends to give fans what they want, and SmackDown doesn't.
Such a sad truth.
Yeah.
They show shots of SummerSlam, kind of that WrestleMania Night After vibe, which I liked. You know, they make it feel big. And up next we get Enzo Amore is challenging Big Cass to a Brooklyn street fight. I'm going to ask you, just from watching at home, how did Enzo's promo come across before the match to you?
It looked like he was a little child paddling his doggy paddle as fast as humanly possible in a ocean full of sharks that wanted to devour him. He looked like he was on borrowed time out there. That's what it looked like. I wasn't impressed with it compared to his previous weeks. I feel like he is really treading on thin ice here. But the fallout from this match is going to really be interesting with what happened, but we'll get there.
Yeah, it's funny, like, he was getting booed here in Brooklyn. The reaction was not good to him.
No.
But also, his promo didn't really make a lot of sense. You know, he's talking about, you know, you went to NYU and you've got all the book smarts, but you can't outsmart street smarts. It's like, but he has outsmarted you every single time.
Right. Exactly. And the whole premise of this, whenever they came out and it's all like, these two are going to fight each other in a street fight, I very audibly said, oh God, not again. Like, I'm so done with it, you know? It's just like, God, this rerun again? We really have to watch this again?
They're determined for us to watch this. So they have this street fight. Cass is killing him for the whole thing, as always. And then we were just kind of sitting in the crowd like, why is this happening? And so it went 9 minutes. It felt like it went 20. It felt so long.
Yeah.
And Cass is just destroying him. Finally, Enzo gets a little bit of heat back because Enzo pulls down the top rope and Cass goes for a running boot and Cass goes to the outside. Enzo goes for the chair, but Cass returns and stomps his hand. Now, on the outside, when Cass tumbled out, he landed pretty awkwardly on that. I didn't notice it, obviously, because I was there live, so I'm watching the ring, so I can't see.
Of course.
But and then he comes back in, and he seems to be fine, and then he's going for the big elbow, so I think he's just kind of, you know, jumping to the finish, but he just falls over, clutches his knee, rolls outside, the trainer checks on him, and JoJo announces that Cass is unable to continue, therefore Enzo Amore is your winner, and Enzo gets a win here. And Cass, I mean, I guess we'll find out later today what the status is of Big Cass. I feel bad for the guy because I don't think this was on TV, but during the break, Cass grabbed the microphone and he said, I'm so ashamed that I'm from a crap hole like Brooklyn or like from New York, and just goes in this diatribe to the crowd and he's like, oh yeah, keep calling me a casshole. It's so offensive. And he did a really good heel promo to just kind of get the crowd disliking him. And so I feel bad for the guy.
While he was injured?
No, before.
Oh, before.
There was like a break. And,
gotcha.
And he, like, I'm not saying I think the guy should be in the main event, but I was intrigued to see what he does out with Enzo. And if we don't get that right now, it's a shame for him.
It's really bad timing. And I could tell that he was in a lot of pain because for about a solid 5 second block, there was dead silence to where they had muted the audio because he was sitting in the ring screaming fuck at the top of his lungs over and over and over again. So,
wow.
Yeah, whatever he did, it wasn't good. I'm suspecting maybe a torn ACL or something similar to that.
You got to be careful when you start getting those torn ACLs now. You're going to be doing the Kevin Nash thing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a bunch of people online are all like, oh, he couldn't even finish the match, and Triple H finished the match with a torn quad and blah, blah, blah. I don't think that should be the benchmark.
No.
First and foremost, that shouldn't be the benchmark. Triple H is a monster of a man, and it's very impressive that he did that, but that shouldn't be expected of everyone. You know, if you get hurt, that shouldn't be the benchmark to make it okay. Secondly, that was a different time then. They actually protect their performers now, so they actively look for stuff like this and stop it immediately after this happens. That way they don't make a bad situation worse.
Yeah, 100%. I hope the guy's okay. I feel bad for him. Also, big shout out to Asuka, who has a collarbone injury for the next 6 to 8 weeks. I hope they don't take the title off of her.
Yeah, I'm hoping so too, because I was going to ask you about that, and I totally forgot that was going to be our little opening tidbit that we were going to run by, and I completely forgot to mention it. I'm of the same opinion. I don't think they should take the title from her, unless they're going to bring her up to the main roster, in which there's your transition, I guess.
But yeah, I mean, you know, she's held that belt for so long, the streak, they put, you know, the better part of 2 years into her. I think this would be a shitty way to end it. I mean, you could turn it into an angle. I know Sean Moore on the community had talked about, you know, maybe she like refuses to give the belt back, or they turn it into an angle or whatever. So I'm open to all those possibilities. But, you know, she's only out 6 to 8 weeks, so she's definitely going to be back for the takeover in Houston for Survivor Series. And, you know, there's no reason why she's probably not going to be on the tapings tomorrow. But there's no reason that she couldn't be back for the next set of tapings in October and, you know, build to something. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think
in my opinion, there's no reason to throw her under the bus with this just yet, you know?
Yeah, no, keep it on her. We get a promo backstage from Emma, talking to Dana Brooke. She's venting about Sasha being the champion, talking about what she's going to do to Nia Jax. And Nia Jax is behind her listening. Emma asked how long she'd been there. And Nia said a while. And she said, you know, after I'm done with you, it won't be give Emma a chance trending on Twitter. It'll be give Emma CPR. I fucking love Nia Jax.
The Brooklyn crowd was chanting CPR, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. It was good.
Nia
beats Emma in about a minute and a bit. It's fine. A monster needs to win. I know there's Emma fans out there who are going to be raging, but, you know, I mean, there's no point in getting into the same story all the time, but... You know, they've got her on TV. She's getting exposure. This is more exposure than she's got in the past.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a story being told.
Even they're actually using her, which is good.
Even if she's being punished, see if she just takes the punishment of whatever it is and makes it work, she'll do fine. But I'm not so sure she will, but I hope I'm wrong.
I hope I'm wrong. I would agree wholeheartedly.
David, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Do you want to walk with Elias?
Not as much as Michael Cole wants to walk with Elias. I love whenever Michael Cole is introducing Elias in these type of segments, because it constantly sounds like he's on the verge of having a sexual climax. He's just like, you guys, we're about to walk with Elias! Ah! And I'm like, oh my God, Michael Cole, put it back in your pants, buddy.
I'm a big Elias guy. I don't ever want to see him wrestle. I just want to see him sing and annoy people.
In his current role, the thing they did with Finn Balor, way too much, Elias.
Yeah, we don't want that much Elias.
Yeah, we don't need that much, right? It's sort of like chocolate, like an after dinner mint, right? Like they bring you the wafer thin mint, right? And they plop it down on your plate. And it's just enough, and you're like, wow, that was perfect. That was just the amount of chocolate I needed after this scrumptious meal. But instead of him being against Finn Balor and beating Finn Balor, that would be like if they fucking brought in a wheelbarrow full of those chocolate mints, and they're like, you got to scarf all these down, motherfucker.
Analogies today. Nailing them.
Thank you. But you know, it's just like I'm gonna get sick to my stomach if I eat that much chocolate. And that's Elias whenever there's too much of him.
So Elias is doing his shtick, and then he tells his opponent is R-Truth, and if there was ever a sign from God that I should go and get some mac and cheese, it is here. So I went straight to the Southern Fried Chicken place that does a mac and cheese, a baked mac and cheese. Oh, it's delicious. I'm going to get some more tonight. And then by the time I came back, Elias had beaten R-Truth, and all was right with the world. So
yeah.
Good times.
There you got your fill with the Elias shtick, and then you got to go and get your fill with the macaroni shtick.
Now, by the way, I need to just clarify right now. I don't know if there's anybody listening to this who works in the Barclays Center. So I apologize for this. See, the people who work in the Barclays Center, they are the dumbest motherfuckers I've ever met in my life. Oh, my God. Like, this one girl. I got a bottle of water. And the other woman, like, just handed me the water. Because, you know, now you can't take a bottle of water into the arena. You have to take the cup. So they hand me the cup and the bottle. And I'm opening the bottle to put the water in the cup. And she just kind of goes, sir, you can't do that. You can't do that. You need to stop. And I was like, why? And she was like, I need to pour it in the cup. And I was like, why do you need to pour it in the cup? Why can't I pour it in the cup? I'm halfway through pouring it in the cup. And she was like, well, I mean, I guess you could pour it in the cup. And I was like, so what's the problem? And then Ollie goes to get some it's chicken tenders or something, and there's a sauce with it. And he was like, "Oh, excuse me, what's the sauce that you've got here?" It's a creamy sauce. Oh, like what flavor of sauce is it? It's a dipping.
Right. Yeah. Is it ranch? Is it buffalo? There's a lot of creamy style sauces.
Is it, you know? So what kind of flavor? What flavor is it? It's a dipping sauce, right?
But
what does it taste like? What's the flavor? Sir, I've told you what sauce it is. It's on the board. Now, what it says on the board is chicken tenders with sauce. I mean, I don't know how. You can, but the best. So I was going to buy my SummerSlam cup, and this isn't a Barclays employee being a Nemrod. This is a customer. This guy gets up and he's like, excuse me, I have an idea. Would it be cool if I bought my kid like a money in the bank briefcase? And they were like, oh, we don't have the briefcase. Like, we had it last year, but we don't have it this year. We just have the belts. And he's like, oh, can I buy just the contract then? What?
What?
So you want a bit of paper or a fake contract on it? Go to that home with fucking Word. Yeah, Microsoft Word.
What the fuck? Why would they have a contract? I don't even know if they have a contract with the briefcase. I've always assumed they don't.
Yeah, I've assumed that.
Yeah, but why the fuck, if they don't have the briefcase, why the fuck would they have the contract?
I will tell you this though, if I ever have kids and I get my kid a money in the bank briefcase, you can bet he's going to have an official contract inside. That's the way you
do it. Oh, yeah. No. Hey, kudos to the guy. I mean, it's a good idea to have the briefcase with the contract in it. So, I mean...
Not so good an idea to just buy the contract.
Right.
How would they know his name? Anyway, there's a lot of questions. So, anyway, back to SummerSlam... back to the post-SummerSlam Raw. Kurt Angle comes out. You know, you suck chance as always. And he promised the fans a surprise.
Oh, by the way, I love whenever he comes out and everybody goes, you suck. And then after the music's done, he just goes, thank you for that. It always gets a pop out of me. I don't know why.
Kurt Angle. What a lad. So he says, for the first time in over a year on Monday Night Raw, please welcome John Cena. Cena comes out. I'm at a point now where I cheer Cena. Like, I'm just at that point. I'm like, I saw that cricket. We put a thing on the Facebook community, but you can either find it there or it's Cricket Wireless. We've got it up on Facebook. And it's Cena being like reading some notes by fans that he's helped, and then the fans turn up. Oh my God, the onions that were being peeled around me when that was on.
You were crying like a little bitch baby.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with having emotion, David. Nothing wrong with being an open kind of man.
Ugh, emotions. The only emotion that I know is hatred, Kenny.
So Cena's in there, and he's talking about, were you not expecting me? There was the Joe and Chance. Why am I here? Well, I saw Kurt Angle at SummerSlam, and he asked if I want to be at Raw, and I said yes. And he said, but I'm here because I want to speak to one WWE superstar. Roman Reigns' music hits, and he comes out, and I thought Cena was a little bit too hokey here. Not as hokey as he usually is, but still, like,
yeah.
There was points where I thought he was really good here, and there was points where I thought he was quite blah. Roman, I thought, nailed the facial expressions here. Props to him. I thought he was kind of... Because he had this look of, like, why the fuck am I out here with you? Like, and I thought it was quite a good look. Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, on the same note, he's the one whose music queued up, and he walked out of his own volition. So
I like to think that he was, like, walking past to catering, and then he just heard his music. He was like, fuck, I'm on? What am I doing? Okay, Cena's like, wait a second, this is Mr. Roman Reigns. You're exactly who I was looking for. And then Roman said, you know, the only time you ever looked for me is when you run your mouth on Twitter.
good line.
Now that you're in my yard, are you going to run your mouth or to my face? And then big Undertaker chant. Now, obviously, Undertaker didn't appear on SummerSlam or Raw. Does that mean that he was in town to set something up? Who knows? But yeah, no Undertaker. So, big Undertaker chant.
Very interesting. Do you think he just, like, boarded the plane and he was just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to see my family. going to see some extended family right now in New York City.
I just think, like you were saying, and like I've said, and like a lot of us have said, they've changed the language of how they talk about him now. And it doesn't sound like he's done.
Do you want to know why I think he was on that plane?
Sure.
I think that he was planning to come out and do a big angle, and Vince changed his mind on the day of.
You think so?
I do.
I can't imagine Taker's going to be happy about flying all that way and then not doing the angle.
I would imagine that he's not, but is he going to get mad at Vince McMahon?
Or was he... Well, I mean, he gets paid $1 million a year for one match, so I'm assuming he's going to just do whatever he's told.
Exactly.
But like, maybe he was there for them to plan through an angle. Because I don't know, did he have the hip surgery? I can't remember.
He did not, from what I gather.
Oh, fuck. Anyway, Cena says it seems like the Raw audience can hold a bit of a grudge. Cena said, I'm not here to talk, let's fight. They are about to fight, and all of a sudden the Miz's music hits. So, you know how, like, if you watch this show and you watch Brock and Braun at the beginning, you kind of think, there's nobody on this show that can top this. I present right. you The Miz. He was world class here. World class. For anyone that thinks this guy should not be a world champion, just watch him here. Carries himself like a world champion. Tremendous promo. Best promo he's done since getting on Raw. And he's done some good ones.
Do you want to know how good this promo was, Kenny?
Go ahead.
My wife fucking hates The Miz, right? Like, it's well documented that Val hates no performer more than The Miz, historically, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was watching this, and she, like, involuntarily chuckled. and I turned to her, and I go, what's up? And she goes, this is just really good.
And you know what's so great about The Miz is because, obviously, he used to pinfall at the end of the night. It doesn't matter. Miz is the sort of performer that if he takes a pinfall now and then, he's such a good performer that he recovers every time.
I'll disagree with that. But,
that's fine, because he's a chicken.
We can get more into that later. I actually felt really... Me and Val, we actually both... I can't believe I'm saying that with Val, but we both felt really bad for The Miz after this show.
Well, we'll get to the main event. But the promo here was very, very good. Miz was like, oh, this is what a sold-out Barclays Center looks like? He rags on Reigns, he rags on Cena. One of my favorite parts of this was just looking at how happy Curtis Axel looked to be around the main event scene. He just looked so happy. And Bo Dallas, who was officially dressed like Jamie Kennedy, before he used to work in the ITR tours, that jacket, my God. So... Anyway, Miz kind of says, you know, how many moments have you two had? Like, I'm so sick of this. And he nails it, keeps going. And they're going to make a tag match for the main event. It's going to be Cena and Reigns against Miz and one of the Miztourage. And Miz says, nah, I'm not into it. That's not a moment for me. That's a moment for you. And I'm not going to fight right now. Samoa Joe's music hits. Out comes Samoa Joe. Big pop for Joe. He comes in the ring. Joe says if anyone's going to team with Miz, it's not going to be those goons. It's going to be him. Joe said he's sick and tired of Roman Reigns telling everyone it's his yard because in this ring, he owns him. He then says to Cena, and as for you, and then just sucker punches Cena. And then the Miz kind of waits for the crew to try and take out Reigns, and then tries to come at Reigns from behind, but Reigns gets to him. Joe, Kukina clutches Cena, but then Reigns hits a Superman punch on Joe. It was a really cool spot. And Cena and Reigns have the stare down while Miz and Samoa Joe kind of retreat. I liked that when Joe got the Superman punch, it did not even knock him to the ground. He was on the outside just selling it standing.
Yeah.
Because he's that good. Just a phenomenal talking segment, I thought. Just
great. Yeah. No, this was good stuff, man. Just riveting TV. I felt like I agree with you. I think Cena was a little too hokey there. I dislike hokey Cena a lot, as I'm sure we've been over in the past, because it's usually a thing that sticks in my craw.
Mainly because when he's not hokey Cena, he's so good.
Exactly. It feels like if he's not taking it seriously, why should I? It's one of those deals.
Yeah.
And which is a shame, because the other guys seem like they were really taking it seriously and doing their job out there. So very, very, very hot segment, though. One of those segments that if you're not paying attention and you're, you know, blowing up beach balls instead, that you really miss something.
So then we go from something riveting to something the complete opposite. It's an 8-man tag for the Cruiserweights. It's Noam Dar, Arya Daivari, Drew Gulak, and Tony Nese against Mustafa Ali, Gran Metalik, Cedric Alexander, and Rich Swann. It goes about 7 minutes, and this was what the fans needed to start doing the wave and the beach ball. Part of the problem is the Cruiserweight division is so useless that it's a problem. I think on this show, they should have just cut the Cruiserweights, because like, this was... If this show had been really fast-paced through the whole thing, maybe they could have got away with it, but I think this was just like 8 minutes of dull. Like, Metalik got some cool stuff in, but just nobody cares. I didn't realize till after the fact that Noam Dar never tagged in, and he did a Fallout video where he talked about there's no money in him being a team player, and he's not going to like bruise his face before a big party in New York City, so that's why he didn't tag in.
Oh, great stuff.
And then he called all the other wrestlers a bunch of dafties, and told Mike Rome to jog on, which was, I always like a bit of Scottish slang in my promos.
I saw a great tweet, and it said, imagine a world where you have Cedric Alexander and this is all you do with him.
I mean, the thing is, it's almost like they just have too many people. You know, yep. There's too many people. Like
But it's all right, though. Now they got Leo Rush, Kenny.
Do you know, I was thinking WrestleMania is missing a guy to go through 3 power bombs through a table set on fire and get off from it. I'm glad. I love, though, that like, this is your Kenny Omega for Cornette. Like, Cornette hates Kenny Omega for superkicking the kids. You are going to, like, Leo Rush in 10 years could be main event in WrestleMania and be a great performer. You could be like, still fucking did that powerbomb spot back in 2017.
yep. I'm a perfect. It always reminds me of the Kevin Nash is just a brilliant, brilliant speaker, right? Like, just one of the all-time greatest interviews. And he did a spot with Kayfabe Commentaries. Highly recommend that you guys support Kayfabe Commentaries. Sean Oliver, friend of the show. Definitely go and check out his stuff with Kayfabe Commentaries. Because he was going over the Goldberg thing, you know, and he's all like, I'm a wrestler who never loses. That's my gimmick. And then he just, you know, he does that great Kevin Nash flabbergasted look into the camera. And he's all like, wow, that would be like me being like, well, I'm going to be a professional baseball player and I'm going to win every game that I pitch and I'm going to strike every batter out. Not one of them's ever going to get a hit against me. Wow, I'm really good at baseball now? That's my gimmick? Who would have thunk that? And that's what I always think of, is Kevin Nash doing that whenever I think of Leo Rush. I'm a wrestler, and my gimmick is that I don't sell any moves, and I win. Wow! Who would have thunk that? I'm successful. I win my matches if I don't ever get hurt.
He's gonna have a very big reality call at the Performance Center, I'm sure.
I was gonna say.
But yeah, like, I'll be honest.
William Regal stretching him out.
As much as I'm not a beach ball guy. Never have been. Never will be. I don't necessarily blame the crowd during this match for doing a wave or doing a beach ball, because it was, you know, the cruiserweight stuff is a struggle on a generic week. And yeah. Here, it's funny, we were talking during the match, and we were like, oh, it's a shame that the cruiserweights aren't working, because they've all got really good theme tunes. They've all got really good music. We get a promo from Neville talking about how he got his title back, and then Tozawa is going to get a rematch in 205 Live. He turns up with Titus. So there you go. Kurt Angle's on his phone backstage. Jason Jordan comes in. Jordan says he doesn't want any special treatment, but he wants a match. And Kurt says, you know, well, Miz is already in a match. And Jordan's like, no, I want Finn Balor. And Angle's like, you know, are you really ready for this? And, like, he's never wrestled before. And, but the match is made. We're going to get it later on. So, there you go. The new tag champs, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, make their way out. They come out. They kind of put each other over, talk about how happy they are. They said they know Sheamus and Cesaro are going to be looking for the rematch, and they'll take on all comers. Hardy Boys come out. Huge pop. Great to see the Hardys come out here. They congratulated them. Matt again teased the broken thing. Like,
oh,
three
yeah,
times.
Big time.
So did Jeff. Jeff said congratulations in the way. So I assume something's happened. And also, I did listen to Cornette's a clip on his YouTube thing. And I get the feeling that if Cornette's in the ear of Anthem, he might be able to help this deal go through.
I hope so, man. So, I really do.
So hopefully that's the one good thing that will come out of Cornette having to go to that fucking cretinous place.
infiltrate it and rebuild it in your likeness thereafter. So, yeah, do it.
So the Hardys, like, Matt ends up talking about how they've been wrestling for 25 years. And I saw a lot of people saying, like, that kind of made the Hardys look really old, because they were like, 25 years ago, we began. And, like, the funny thing is, like, Seth and Dean, like, we looked up to you when we were kids. And, like, you're like, Dean and the Hardys look the same age.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, yeah, for real.
To be fair, I think Jeff looks younger than Dean. And he's like, 9 years older than him. So, so they have this match. I was feeling a little bit under the weather, so I didn't get to see the match live because I was feeling quite ill, so I had to go to get some water and stuff. But I did watch it back today, and oh my god, this match, 17 minutes of just gold. Ambrose and Rollins work so well together. We got some old school Hardy stuff. We got some new stuff. We got, you know, the tag champs doing suicide dives under the Hardys. Some really good near falls. Jeff has the twist of fate. And a swanton, but Ambrose puts his knee up on the swanton and then does dirty deeds to Jeff. Rollins gets the pin. This was just fucking great.
This was a dream match that I never thought we would ever see. And I'm being 100% serious. The fact that they gave this away on TV as opposed to building this to like WrestleMania or something, or at least Survivor Series. Woo! I don't know about that, man. That's crazy. That's crazy talk.
That tells me that the Hardy Boys maybe are not staying together for too long.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think. But even then, it deserved a pay-per-view match at the very least. I'm very curious where the Hardys go from here, though, because I mean they were cleanly dispatched. It was a clean win, and it was awesome, man. This match was great. This match was better than any of the matches at SummerSlam, in my opinion.
Wow.
I love this match. This was the type of match that we've been waiting to see, and I never thought we'd see it. And we actually got it. It was all fluid and smooth, and the psychology was there. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Tag Team Wrestling. It's alive in WWE.
It is.
So we then got we got told that it's official. It's Lesnar and Strowman at No Mercy. We see Samoa Joe backstage. Miz seems to think that Samoa Joe has joined the Miztourage, because of course he does, because he's the Miz. And he's like giving him instructions. He's like, you know, I'm so glad you're taking direction, and da-da-da-da-da. And then Joe just stands up and he's like, listen, shut up. You two stay on the outside. There's a constant presence. And you do your annoying, unorthodox thing that you do in the ring. And we'll be fine. Are we cool? And Miz is like, yeah, we're cool. And then Miz goes to like tap him in the back, and Joe just turns around as if he's about to bite his face off. I just want to see the Miz and Samoa Joe have to coexist for a while. Like,
it was really fun.
So good.
And so it was so entertaining. And like, I don't know if you ever knew this, but I never knew just how good of a promo Samoa Joe was until his feud with Lesnar and Heyman.
Yeah, he's brought his A game to this. And like, I think that even like, I was concerned coming out of SummerSlam at what was going to happen to Joe, but my God, they've nailed it with him again. Like, he now seems to be going to a program with Cena, and
I really hope so. And here, Cena and Joe is what I'd like to see.
I mean, it's clear that's where they're going. Has to be Cena and Joe. And you know, because they made a point of having Miz take the pin in the main event, so they're kind of keeping them a little bit apart. I mean, Samoa Joe just, as for you, John Cena, and headbutting him, one of my favorite things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's how you leave a mark, literally.
Here's a baffling segment I want you to explain to me. Sasha Banks comes out. She's booed out of the building because she's from Boston. She talks about leaving her heart in Brooklyn after all that's happened there. And then she sends Ric Flair some well wishes that wins the crowd back over for a second. They're booing her the whole time. Then Alexa Bliss comes out. Then the fans boo her as well. They chant "You tapped out" at her. They don't seem to like either of them. And then Alexa, you know, gloriously sort of says no to a rematch tonight because Brooklyn fanboys don't deserve to see her championship celebration. Says she's going to do it next week, and they set up the match. But why did Brooklyn not like either of them? I don't get it. I don't understand.
Why did Brooklyn bring a bunch of fucking beach balls? Maybe they are a bunch of misogynists.
I don't even think that's what it was. I think it was just that they thought they disliked Sasha because she was from Boston, but then there was an initial pop for Alexa, and then it just seemed to go into booze, and it was just a really jarring segment. I thought the crowd kind of ruined this. There was a fucking guy beside me who kept booing Sasha Banks, and he was just a fucking piece of shit. Boo or cheer who you like, but he didn't really seem to have any reasons to why he was booing her. And then Alexa comes out, and he practically got his dick out and started having a wank.
Well, that's probably why, because he has a shot at fucking Alexa Bliss.
I felt sitting there going, you do know because you fuck her doesn't mean you have to cheer for her.
You know, this is the male equivalent of the female fans that cheer for Roman Reigns.
And some like, male fans, I'm sure.
Of course. But it's like we have the male and female, the straight male and straight female equivalents of one another on the same fucking program. And both of those people are just detestable. It's like, God, Jesus, fuck. So worst idiots.
We have that segment. It takes us to Finn Balor versus Jason Jordan. Now, they had like an 11-minute match. I was trying my best to watch it. Now, granted, it was very difficult for me to really pay attention to this because of what was going on around it. But they seemed to wrestle a really good match. Like, the actual wrestling of it was a good match. You could tell Balor was pissed that he was being given the beach ball treatment.
Yeah.
Really pissed. There was... Because if you remember, Balor also had a little bit of bad Barclays experience last year because they made that decision to like show the red belt.
Yeah.
And then like the fans just hated the red belt, so that they kind of shat on the Universal title match with him and Seth.
Yeah.
Which
was a great match.
So anyway, the Finn Balor ended up getting the victory on Jason Jordan. But yeah, I mean, it's just a shame that like, I'm not even saying, oh, you know, the story's so great here, but just, the guys are trying, like, just let them wrestle.
Yeah, no, this is just, it's mind-boggling to me that people can be wrestling fans and just shit all over this match. This match was great, Kenny. I would give this match probably like an 8.5 out of 10. I really love this match. I thought it was really good. They did a, it's a match that we hadn't seen yet. They seemed to work really well together. It was two very different styles because Balor has that Japanese hard-hitting style. And then you have the Olympic wrestling style of Jason Jordan. And frankly, the pure brute strength of Jason Jordan. These two, they had good chemistry, good timing together. It was excellent, but you got to watch this match on mute now because the crowd ruined it and they shit all over yet another good moment with their stupid fucking beach balls.
Yep, they did. Then they hyped the match next week with Alexa and Sasha. We get the hype for 205 Live with Neville and Tozawa. And it's now time for the main event. John Cena and Roman Reigns against Samoa Joe and The Miz. The Miz thrashing the outside. There's a great moment at the beginning where Axel and Dallas are on the apron and Samoa Joe just gives them a look like, fuck off! And they get off the apron immediately. because Samoa Joe could kill you if he wanted to. So the crowd, again, fucking beach ball shit during this match. I think it was during the break The Miz got on the mic and tried to shut them down. He did a decent job, but they were still doing it. Towards the end, the fans kind of get into the match. Joe puts Cena into the Coquina Clutch. Reigns runs in to break it up with the same spot he did earlier with the Superman Punch, but Joe lets it go at the last second, so he Superman punches Cena. What a great spot.
Yeah. And
Reigns and Joe are brawling at ringside. Miz sets up for the Skull Crushing finale. Cena counters into the AA for the win.
By the way, The Miz had the most maniacal look on his face before that spot.
Yeah, he was so mad at this crowd and all that.
Yeah.
So Cena and Reigns get the victory. Cena's holding onto his jaw. Reigns is kind of staring at him. Reigns tells Cena, my bad. Reigns leaves and they close the show. What did you think of the main event match, if you can take the beach ball shit out of it?
If you put it on mute and do not focus on all of the times the WWE cameraman panned in on the beach balls to give them the spotlight and thus encourage this atrocity even further, it was a good experience. John Cena milking the beach ball thing too, though, that didn't help. So
I get he wants to be a babyface, but like, This is ruining storytelling, this beach ball stuff, if it gets much worse.
Yeah.
I thought that the thing here was they protected Joe very much on this show. And I think he was the one that needed the protection and the rehabilitation from SummerSlam, because while you and I don't agree on the main event as a whole, because I really loved it and you were kind of mad about it, but
it was a fine match. It was an 8 out of 10 match. But that's if you remove Braun Strowman from that match, then it's quickly average.
But what we did agree on was Samoa Joe was a little bit of the afterthought. You thought he was a complete afterthought. I thought he was a little bit of an afterthought. And I think that what they did with him on Raw was really strong, actually, because he now is positioned as the number two heel on the brand.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's a great place for him to be. I'm so glad that he's still in a top position, and I really want to see Cena Joe. I really want to see it.
I do too. I have a feeling, though, that it's going to be Joe and Reigns next, and I do not want to see that at all.
I just feel like we've seen it too much.
Yes.
Like, it's not that it's bad. It's good, but it's just like,
well, we know where it would lead, Kenny, and we don't like where it's going to lead.
But yeah, so I mean, let's talk about the Miz pinfall then, because they're in this position where, Reigns just ate the pin to Lesnar, so you don't want to pin him right away. Cena, he's just come back, you don't want to pin him right away. Joe needs the rehabilitation, you don't want to pin him right away. So they go with Miz eating the pinfall on this one. But you wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I just think it's rather unfortunate. The guy comes out and cuts arguably the greatest promo of his career, goes backstage and in a video package tells Joe, I know you can handle Reigns, and I've got Cena's number. And then, meanwhile, he runs out and takes an AA and gets pinned immediately by John Cena. I think, like, this is an ongoing issue, too, because he looked like a buffoon against Cena at WrestleMania. So that wound is still fresh in our minds. And it just – seeing him continually lose to the same guy, the same top guy, the same floundering guy, the same top guy who's going away to make a movie career for himself, to see him continually lose after all the hard work that he's put in over the course of the past year – it seems like he is running and gunning that engine, pedal to the metal, but he's stuck in the mud, and the mud's just flying up and smacking him dead on the face. You know, he can't get any traction because he's constantly sinking where he is, despite his best efforts. And I think he deserves more than what he has been given.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think the thing for Miz that's a good and a bad thing is I think that, you know, like I was saying earlier, I think he can recover from losses all the time, but I think they use that too much to their advantage.
They do, yeah.
Like, you know,
that's typically the WWE style. Once they find out that you're bulletproof, they RoboCop your ass. You get shot with 200 bullets. And then they go, let's see if he's still bulletproof after this nuclear missile.
And, you know, he was the sad thing for him was, he was put in a position at WrestleMania that he could not live up to the promos that he cut in the lead up to, because John Cena, and I mean, they had 10 minutes. You can't really do a great match in 10 minutes, unless you're Brock Lesnar, in which case you only need 5. But like, they had 10 minutes for this mixed tag. It was never really going to be great because Nikki's injured and she was never really, you know, horsewoman level wrestler anyway. You've got Maryse, who hasn't wrestled in years, and you've got Cena, who very much thinks he should have been in the Undertaker match. And Miz is kind of trying to fight all of that, and it was just, I don't think he could have won. And that's a shame. Well,
right, but I mean, that's not his fault. That's a position that they put him in. All of these positions are positions that they put him in. And that's
do you know what
point.
He should be doing right now? If I was booking, is Jinder Mahal would be champion, 100%, the United States champion. Because I actually think that he'd be a good U.S. champion.
I
think as a performer, he'd be able to grow there. He's not in the main event, so he's not being sort of given this huge pressure that he has to deliver main event level matches. Because WWE main event level matches in 2017 are so much higher than even 4 years ago. They're so much higher quality-wise, and if Jinder was in that kind of mid-card title picture, I think he could do really well, and I think the Singh brothers part of the act would be really good, and, you know, if in a year's time it takes off, promote him to world champion. But the world champion on SmackDown should be The Miz. That's who it should be.
I would agree with that, yeah. Yep, that was, and that's the biggest issue that I had with him coming over to Raw from SmackDown.
Can you imagine if at SummerSlam, Nakamura had the championship won, and Maryse gets on the apron, and the Miz Taraj both come in and cost Nakamura the match? Nakamura is being taken out by these two guys, you know, use a chair or something, and then you get this story of Nakamura trying to get through the Miz Taraj to get to the Miz. Who wouldn't want to watch that?
Yep.
Anyway.
But unfortunately, we have what we have. Somebody shit all in our bed, and now we have to sleep in it.
It's almost like, you know, you go, like, I don't know why I always have sexual examples. It's like, it's like Val says to you, David, I'm going to give you a sensual massage, right?
So, my wife's massages are the worst thing on the planet.
Pretend they're good.
I would not wish them on my worst enemy, and if she's listening to this, she knows it's true.
Okay, pretend that you're married to somebody who does good massages. Go with the fucking story, right? So pretend that you... So somebody says, right, okay, we're going to give you a massage, a great massage. You're going to be lying there. It's going to be a really hot person giving you the massage. And we're going to use this, like, you know,
I didn't know Robert was a masseuse.
What's your favorite flavor, David? Like, do you like
watermelon?
Watermelon flavor oil, right? And there's candles going, and it's like, and you're going to get your hole at the end of it, right? It's all going to be good.
Sure.
That's like the WWE right now. all the ingredients are there for you to get your hole. However, what they've done is they've had the hot person straddle you and rub the watermelon oil in your eyes. And you can't see. And you're not having fun at that because you're like, oh, but why are you doing this? You could have just rubbed my chest. It would have been nice. That's what they've done. Gender is watermelon oil in the eyes.
Oh, no. It's a cause for blindness. And after watching SmackDown, I kind of wish I was.
David, I'm going to ask you to give me 2 ratings on Raw this week. We've never done this before.
Oh.
Give me the rating on what they tried to do, storyline-wise, eliminate the crowd.
Okay, so everything, like a rating with Raw muted and the audience photoshopped out, and then a rating with what it actually was.
Yes, right? And obviously with promos, you know, you need to hear the promos. But basically, the audience can't hear them at all. Sure. And it's just what they've tried to do.
Sure. So it's sort of like whenever The Rock and Mick Foley fought in that empty arena.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, imagine an empty arena score and with the arena score. I'm curious, because I have my two, so I'm curious. So let's do the beach ball crowd score first.
I would give that a 7.5.
That's with the beach ball crowd?
With, yes.
I would give it a 4. Genuinely, I think that
you were there too, though, and that makes it much, much worse.
Yeah. So for me, 4 with the beach ball crowd. Horrible.
Gotcha.
Horrible. Because they just... It would have been fine if it was just a cruiserweight match. I wouldn't have had a problem with it because I get it. Cruiserweight division's not exactly that exciting. But during the Hardys...
Even then, disrespectful to the cruiserweight guys. It's not their fault.
But I could have almost let that go. But...
Right.
During the Hardys and Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, a dream match that we never thought we'd get to see.
Yeah.
During the main event with performers like Cena and Reigns and Joe and The Miz, and like, you know, you're the people that want The Miz and Joe to get over and you're fucking them here. Guys like Finn Balor, who's trying to get his mojo back from his injury and trying to gain some steam, and you're just fucking with all of them. So yeah, 4 is my score for that. Take out the beach ball crowd and... for what they tried to do as a whole.
I would give that show a 9 out of 10. I loved it.
Wow. For the first time ever, I'm going to give it a lower score than you.
I believe that. You had to endure that fucking beach ball crowd.
On its own, 8.5. I would have gone to a 9. The only reason I didn't go to a 9 is I thought the cruiserweight match and Big Cass and Enzo was just a dire shred to get through.
Right.
But apart from that, I thought everything else was good. I liked Elias destroying R-Truth, Nia Jax destroying Emma, the promo segments with Brock and Braun, and Roman and Cena and The Miz and Joe were tremendous. I'm really happy. I don't know why. I'm just really happy for Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. Like,
Screw the Sandy Hook truther, but Curtis Axel.
I forgot about your thing with him. I like the idea that, like, you know, some guys who are maybe not going to get the push of the main guy, that they can be in a little faction and get a little taste of the good stuff. So,
yeah,
so there you go. That's our scores. David, where can people find you on the Twitter machine if they wish to engage with you in any capacity?
Boop all of those bops on your keyboard and zippity zoop them over to Zoopsoul. That's ZOOPSOUL. Kenny, you know who's not great?
Jeff Jarrett.
In addition to him?
The man who sat in front of me last night who kept just going, so, do you think they're gonna have Jason Jordan be revealed that he wasn't the son of Kurt Angle? Do you think they're going to do that? And asked that exact same way to all 3 of us at the same time. He's not great.
He wouldn't be great, but I was going to say, Jesus Shuttlecock.
Oh, Jesus Shuttlecock. Jesus! Oh, what a man. What a mighty, mighty bad man.
Yes.
So there you go. I also, we got a quick tweet earlier from Dre Warner, one of our loyal listeners, who says that, looks like New Orleans has to up the Kenny McIntosh random dick grab event. And he's a GIF of Neil Patrick Harris from How I Met Your Mother, saying challenge accepted. So looks like looks like I'm going to be on Skype from Glasgow WrestleMania when I'll leave David and Sandra to get their genitals grabbed.
That's all right. People can grab my genitals at any time. That's fine. They're going to be disappointed, but I mean, they can do it.
They can grab them, and then they're going to have to grab further, is what you're saying. But
right, right. They can grab them, and then the reaction right afterwards will be like, oh, that's it.
So, thank you for listening, everyone. I'm on KennyMC1985, inside_the_ropes for everything else. Thank you so much for all the great support during the SummerSlam week. I'm glad you guys all enjoyed the podcasts. We are not doing 7 Days, 7 Podcasts for Survivor Series. No. Because I can't... I need a break from 7 Days for a little while.
I understand.
I want to thank David for yesterday giving me that very lovely speech about the tours and stuff. That's very nice. I want to thank Sandra for doing a lot of editing work last week, which she didn't need to help me out. And also go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for a ton of interviews that we've done. And also go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes because once I get home, David and I are going to get around to talking SummerSlam 2006, which David has never seen.
So yeah, that will be a fun blast from the past. And you know, Kenny, I was going to introduce you today. I was going to lead the podcast today, and I completely forgot. And do you know how I was going to introduce you? Can I just give you the little introduction here into, sure. Now that we're at the end of this?
Let's pretend that the show starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hey, everybody, it's me, David J. McCutcheon at ZoopSoul on Twitter. I am joined here by my co-host. He is a man who was never paid one dime for all of the t-shirts he sold at a wrestling promotion across the pond. You don't have to fuck him, but you do have to pay him. Mr. Kenny McIntosh!
That's a great intro, and it's actually, I'm really glad you brought that up. Can I tell you some news I'm going to tell the listeners?
Oh, see, this is unplanned, by the way.
This is unplanned.
I'm happy that it led somewhere, though.
So, A couple of days ago, I was meeting up with a t-shirt distributor about Inside the Ropes t-shirts, because we've got the Inside the Ropes t-shirts coming back, we're going to have one for David, we're going to have one for Sandra. So I'd like to tell you what my first t-shirt is going to be from Inside the Ropes. Well, there's going to be two. There's going to be one related to a certain WWE champion that I want all of you to wear when you go to a WWE event. But you know the other t-shirt that I'm going to release and I'm going to gain full monetary compensation from? Fuck Kenny. Because I want you to fuck me now, folks. So I'm going to ask you, buy the t-shirt. Buy our one in a different shade of blue and give the money to me this time. And then when you want to go see WCPW Live, which you absolutely should, they're great shows, I want you to wear our t-shirt. I want you to wear one of those. And rub it in the face of the man who thinks it's okay to employ people and sell t-shirts and not give them any money for them.
You know what I think we need, actually, Kenny? I think we need, like, a Fuck Beach Balls t-shirt.
We do. We should have something beach ball related. We're also going to have, you know what we need, actually?
We need, you know that image of Hulk Hogan ripping his t-shirt?
Just ripping a beach ball.
We need one of those of Mr. Kyle Burdick ripping a beach ball into.
I mean, I'm not too sure the Kyle one would sell as much as the Hogan one, but Kyle's certainly up there. They both got their start in Minneapolis, so
yeah, it's true. Yeah. They both come from the land of Minnesota.
But yeah, so we're also going to be looking into getting some pins as well. Like that's gonna be really cool. I know a lot of people wear pins now. It's a new cool thing to do.
Yeah, so, of course.
We're going to have some fun merch coming in the next couple of weeks. But thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Thank you for all your support. And if you get a chance, check out the WCPW World Cup Finals this week, because I know a lot of hardworking people have put a lot of months out of their lives, out of their personal lives, to put those shows together. And they are very high-quality shows. And no matter what I say or joke about certain people... please do go check them out because they deserve your attention.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And whenever people do well in the wrestling business, it translates. It trickles down. It's one of those industries.
It is. Yeah. And the last thing, obviously, you know, she's not listening to this. Big shout out to Dana Brooke. Her boyfriend just passed away earlier on today. He's 26.
Really sad to hear it.
Really sad news, but I really... Maybe work will be able to take her mind off things, and maybe, you know, maybe going on the road is just what she needs. I don't know, but thoughts go out to her for that.
Absolutely.
But anyway, let's go. What song do we play ourselves out with this week? What WWE theme tune do you want to hear as we play the podcast out here, David?
Oh, I was going to choose Karma Chameleon again, but you threw me for a loop there, Kenny.
I thought you were going to pick George Michael, I Want Your Sex. That's why I didn't give you the option.
you got to have some faith in me, Kenny.
we're not going to do George Michael fucking titles for the next 20 minutes. Hurry up, what song?
Kenny, I will be your father figure.
For fuck's sake.
How about the man who had a really good showing the other night at NXT TakeOver? How about we do a little bit of Aleister Black?
One of my favorite theme tunes in WWE. I think we're looking at a future headliner in WWE. What a guy. Here's Aleister Black. We'll be back next week with another Raw Rundown where David will have another intro for me, which will no doubt make fun of What Culture. Bye!